Today's program has been brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit internationalculinarycenter.com.
I'm the ringleader of the question asking, and I'm often the one who's charged with going out and finding the answers to the questions. I feel a responsibility because I have the resources to go outside of the restaurant to bring data and information in so that we can, as a group, disseminate it and go forward.
HeritageRadioNetwork.org proudly presents Evolutionaries, Wiley Dufresne. Wiley Dufresne is the star athlete of forward-thinking chefs in America. His iconic restaurant, WD50 in New York City, helped set the stage for an entire movement of cooking. In 2006, the Michelin Guide awarded WD50 a star, which it has continued to maintain. Wiley was nominated for Best Chef New York at the James Beard Award for 6 consecutive years before finally winning the award in 2013. A true competitive spirit, Wiley grew up no stranger to the restaurant industry, but worked tirelessly to become one of the best chefs in the world.
I've been working in restaurants since I was 11. I had a moment between my junior and senior year of college, which is, I think, a moment that a lot of college kids have, where you're supposed to start to think about what you'd like to be in life, what would you like to do with yourself. And I had the good fortune of working in, it was probably the best restaurant to date at that time that I had worked in. I was working at a restaurant called Lucky's in Providence, Rhode Island. In a perfect world, if I possessed any sort of natural abilities, I would have wished to have been a professional athlete, maybe a baseball player. But I'm not faster, stronger, taller than you or anyone else for that matter. And so that was never in the cards. But there was a moment that summer between my junior and senior year where I realized that my hands hurt, my back hurt, I was nervous, I was sweaty. There was a coach, there was a star players, there were all these things going on in this kitchen that mimicked playing sports, playing team sports. And I had all the same joys, emotions, and sentiments of playing, for me, high school team sports, because I wasn't even good enough to really play collegiate level team sports. And so that's when I said, I have to start to think about doing something in my life. I'm gonna go back and finish my senior year of college, and when that's over, I'm gonna try to be a cook, because there's nothing I've done to date that I enjoyed as much or gave me so many of the same similar feelings that playing sports had done. I went to cooking school, and while I was in cooking school, I went to the daytime program at the FCI, and so I was working. I was going to school during the day, and I was working at the Gotham Bar and Grill in the evening. So as soon as school would end, I would hightail it over to the Gotham to work pastry and then eventually garmage over there. And then I moved when Alfred opened up 1/5, which is now Otto, as we all know it. I was lucky enough to get a job over there. But I had a nagging ski injury from college that caught up with me after about, I think, 13 or 14 months working for Alfred, and I had to have an operation on my knee. And back then, when you get arthroscopic surgery, you're out for 6 months. Now I think you're out for 6 minutes. Technology is a lot better. And during that time, I sat on the couch for a long time, and I started compiling a list of 5 places that I wanted to work at. And I had been reading Simple Cuisine, John George's book, and I really loved his approach. I was fascinated with how he was able to take classic French cooking and just with a few sort of turns of the knob radically change it. Take out all the cream and the heavy stocks, replace them with juices and oils. And his approach just seemed really not only radical but exciting and interesting. And it seemed very alive to me. And I was a huge, and still am a huge fan of French cuisine and the French masters. And he's sort of the next generation, and I was fascinated by what he was doing. And I dropped my resume off there, and I called and called and called and called, and I was lucky enough to get a trail, and then I called and called and called, and I think I made myself a nuisance. And so in an effort to get me to stop calling, they hired me. I walked in at JoJo's at the very bottom. I walked in, and I was working garmage, garmage / pastry, the very sort of the entry where everybody entered in that kitchen, and I loved it. To this day, I think many of my fondest culinary moments come from that restaurant, and I think I've tried to capture a lot of the spirit and the style of that place in my career. And oddly, I think with the opening of Alder, I'm finally getting even closer to a restaurant that really has a lot of the JoJo DNA in it, because I really loved my time there. It was a formative time, but it was also just so much fun. I mean, it was terrifying and backbreaking, and again, all of those things that I think of about playing sports that I both loved and feared, and that was life at JoJo's, and it was a wonderful time that I feel very fortunate to have had. From there, I went to Jean George, and I opened Jean George, and actually Didier Viraud, who was the chef de cuisine at JoJo's at the time, came over to be the chef de cuisine at Jean George, and I was lucky enough with Paula to come over and be a part of that. And then, you know, that was an amazing group of folks that we opened Jean George up with, and that was really exciting to be a part of what is now, you know, I think iconic New York restaurant. You know, to be able to say I helped unload the furniture off the truck and I screwed the lockers together is something that I feel great pride in. And having been part of the original crew there and getting to see what that was like. JoJo's was a wonderful casual restaurant serving amazing food. And Jean George is, you know, fine dining at the highest level. And so that was really fun. And then after a long time, I had said to Jean George, I think I'm going to step down from my role. I had sort of risen through the ranks pretty far, and I was in semi-retirement for about 2 weeks, and then Jean George called me and said, I'm opening a restaurant in Las Vegas, and I need some help. Would you be willing to go out there and help me get it opened? And I had just come back from my best friend from high school's bachelor party in Las Vegas, so I said, sure, I will definitely go back there. That memory is still fresh in my mind, and so I went to Las Vegas for what was originally supposed to be a month, but turned out to be 6. Then I left the Jean George family, but not entirely, because Jean George is one of my partners at WD50, so I wouldn't say I left it entirely, but I went, while I was in Las Vegas, I had the good fortune of meeting the late, great Jean-Louis Paladin, and I worked for him very briefly. And then from there, I moved on to 71 Clinton, where I was lucky enough to be given an opportunity there. And I've been stuck on Clinton Street ever since. I was pretty sure early on that what I wanted out of kitchen life was my own restaurant, that I didn't want to just keep working for other people. That I wanted to work for a bunch of great people or a number of great people and learn as much as I could. My original plan was not to spend as much time with Jean George as I did. I thought I would spend a year or two or maybe three with a number of great chefs, and then hopefully I would someday have my own restaurant. But I just fell in love with the approach, with the style, and spent a long time there. But I had always had it in my mind that someday I would like to own a restaurant. My father's been in the restaurant business for longer than I've been alive. And he, you know, my father tricked me into being the chef at 71 Clinton Fresh Food. He said he was opening. He's not a chef in the traditional sense, but he's been involved in restaurants for a really long time. So he was putting together this place, and he needed someone to help him get it started. It was a small 28-seat restaurant on Clinton Street. And would I help him for a brief period? And I said, absolutely. Of course I'll help you. And things weren't really working out for me with Jean-Louis, so it was the right time to go. And I thought, well, if I can't run a 28-seat restaurant in the middle of nowhere on a street that no one's ever heard of in the Lower East Side of Manhattan, then I probably should just pack it up anyway. And so I took one of my buddies who I'd been working with for a long time and made him my sous chef, and another guy that I met in Las Vegas, and it was just the three of us. And while we were there, I would say is when I began to try to figure out what my style is. I began to be in a scenario where I could ask more questions, and that's where this all began, is asking questions, asking more questions, asking different questions than we had been asking previously.
After all of his culinary journeys, Wiley Dufresne finally opened his first restaurant in 2003, WD50. It opened with an ambitious menu, twisting dishes on their heads and confusing some diners. But Wiley's approach soon caught on, and copycats popped up everywhere. Above all, he just wanted to make sure the food coming out of the kitchen was executed as well as it possibly could, leaving no stone unturned.
Cooking is a very repetitive thing. Again, in a restaurant specifically, it's very, you do the same thing over and over again. So if you pay attention to what you're doing, there's a lot of data that you're collecting that can be analyzed and subsequently used to figure things out. And so it's always been my job to sort of corral people and say, okay, guys, let's check this out. This is neat. Or look at this piece of equipment. Or look at this ingredient. Or why are we doing this the way we're doing it? Or, you know, you do that every day. Start thinking about, is there a better way to do it? Is that the quickest way? Is that the best way? Why are we doing it like this? You know, we've always known how to do things, how to roast a chicken, how to poach an egg, how to fillet a fish. But we haven't really known why. Why do we do it this way? Why are we doing it that way? Well, because that's the way we've always done it. Because it works. Or my favorite, well, because I said so. That's why we're doing it that way. But all of that's kind of empty. There's no learning. There's no knowledge. It's, you know, it's like standing on a box. There's nothing inside the box. I know how to roast a chicken, maybe because I worked for five different chefs. I know five different ways to roast a chicken. But I don't know why I'm doing it this way. I don't know what's happening to the chicken. I don't understand what's an egg made of and what cooking an egg actually means. Why do green vegetables turn brown? I don't understand any of that. Was where we were at a long time ago. And you know, we're still, I think, in the dark ages in many ways of our culinary knowledge, but we're making giant steps. We know more today than we did last year. We know more last year than we did 5 years ago. And so on. I'd say the last 25 years, we've learned more than we had in the previous 50,000 years or something like that. Since, you know, we've been throwing sticks at animals and rubbing sticks together and holding them over the fire, we've made some headway, but we have a long, long, long way to go. So that's been my role at the restaurant, is to create a place where some of those answers can be at hand, and so we can keep asking questions. And, you know, the idea is to amass as much knowledge as we can and then to apply our creativity to that knowledge in the hopes of coming up with something interesting and contributing to the process and leaving a body of work behind us that we can all look back on and say, look, this is what we did. This is what, you know, WD-50 has been, or this is what, you know, we've contributed. We've helped come up with some answers. And I think that is something that the average cook initially has a hard time with, but eventually can feel really good about when they look back and say, you know what, I was part of that. So for us, it's about understanding these products, these techniques, the science, the chemistry, what's going on to our food as we process it, so that we can make decisions, better decisions about how to cook it, so that we can understand what we're doing, so we're not just lucky that your chicken was moist and juicy. We're sure that your chicken is going to be moist and juicy. We're building consistency. We're building a better mousetrap. We're not building the right mousetrap versus the wrong mousetrap. But what's in it for you is, I don't want to say a guarantee because that's risky, but I'm hoping, we're striving for a guarantee that your food will be better made. We are striving to make sure that when you eat something at WD-50, that it is as well made as it possibly can be, that we couldn't make it. Well, we can always make it better, but we are trying as hard as we possibly can to make it as well as we possibly can, using as much knowledge and technology as we can to achieve that goal, with the understanding, of course, that you might not like it, because the way I like a poached egg, you might not like a poached egg. But that poached egg will be poached to the best of my abilities, the best of our abilities, I promise. So what's in it for the diner, I think, I mean, it depends on what level the diner wants to participate too, because I don't think that I want to be up on my soapbox. I mean, I was a lot as a younger chef. I was on my soapbox a lot and very, very much sort of shouting from the highest heights that look at what we can do. And it's not about what we can do anymore. And that's an important thing to acknowledge. It's about what we know. What is in it for you is contingent upon at what level you want to experience it. I mean, if you are excited and you want to come and see what we're up to, and you're down with the 12-course tasting menu, and you want to see what the narrative that we're telling is about right now at this particular moment in time, then go for it. Or if you're for suits, guys in blue blazers, and it's bonus season and you want to drink some heavy duty red wines and have some steaks, I'll do that too for you. I'll meet you wherever you want to be met. And we try to, I think it's our job as a restaurant to engage you at whichever level you want to be engaged and not force it on you and say, well, if you come to WD-50, you have to come and have it this type of experience. Otherwise, you can go somewhere else. It's like that, I think, unfortunately, was my attitude for a long time, but I don't think is a terribly enlightened one. And now I think it's more about trying to find a balance because not everybody wants to go to the theater every night. We have to understand you do have to eat, right? And maybe it's just 7 o'clock and it's time for you to eat dinner and we're just glad you came. And so we're gonna feed you and leave you alone, or we're gonna take you on a journey if you wanna go down that road.
Wiley has often been criticized for his intellectual approach to cooking. His heady tasting menus offered some of the most innovative and avant-garde cooking New York City had ever seen, but some argued there was no hint of comfort or familiarity with the food.
When you're trying to tap into a personal memory and have it be commercially successful, that's difficult because if my grandma doesn't smell the same as your grandma did, then that doesn't work for me, you know? If it creeps me out, the memory of what my grandma smelled like, that soapy lavender thing gives me the heebie-jeebies, then why am I going to buy that? And I think that that's the tricky part with making things too personal. When we tap into memories, which I think is a powerful thing, when we tap into childhood memories or just nostalgia, things like that, we try to use more universal things, Eggs Benedict, bagel and cream cheese and lox. So things that are not 100% universally successful or liked, but a lot of people like Eggs Benedict. A lot of people like, particularly New York City, like a bagel with cream cheese and some lox. I think talking about the ingredients is I don't know if disingenuous is the right thing, but I find it a little tiresome to say, well, we go and get the best ingredients. No shit, we get the best ingredients too. You're doing something different with them than what we're doing. Now, if you want to talk about the farmers, you want to talk about the people who are putting their hands in the ground, because that's a really hard job. That job's not fun at all. And I think that we can talk about them forever, and I think we should talk about them. The people that help harvest our ingredients are important, but to talk about, well, we got this really good, me too. You know, it's your job as a chef to start with the best ingredients. What you choose to do with them is, I think, totally up to you. And one is not right and one is not wrong. I do think it's wrong to start with, well, let's talk about these ingredients. It's like, we don't talk about the beautiful fish that we have flown in from Japan twice a week for you, because we believe that you should expect us to source good ingredients. And that's my feeling, is that any chef worth his or her weight wants to start with good product for any number of reasons. You want to have good product? You want to have good equipment to work with that product? Is somebody out there going, I have the crappiest ingredients and rusty pans and we make awesome food, come on down? I mean, nobody's saying that. That's crazy. No, we start with good ingredients and we have an approach on how we want to handle them and what we want to do with them, as does every other chef. And I think, let's talk about what you're doing. Not talk about where you shopped, because that's not as compelling a story. The story you're telling is what you put on the plate, not the stuff that you bought to put on the plate, or for that matter, that you grew, because plenty of chefs are growing their own ingredients these days too. And I think that that's also very interesting and wonderful if you have the ability to incorporate growing your own, a certain percentage of your own product that you can incorporate into your menu. No chef is exclusively growing all their own product. Every chef is using some of it, but also supplementing it with external, because, you know, nothing's growing right now. We're all shopping today. Nothing's growing at this moment anywhere near where we're sitting, really.
In 2013, Wiley Dufresne opened Alder, his second restaurant in the East Village at 157 2nd Avenue. It's a 50-seat pub with a menu of modern, casual food to match. Thus far, WD-50 has been his defining statement, an uncompromising restaurant that made people think about their food in ways they had never before.
You know, I like watching excellence in anything. I like watching people who are great at things. I find that very compelling. I personally enjoy, you know, physical exercise of any kind. I mean, in my waning years in life here, and I feel like I should be exercising more. But I mean, I ride my bike all the time. I did have a gym membership before Sandy reclaimed the gym, and try to get some exercise as much as I can. I mean, at this point, my motivation is to not be the fattest dad in the playground. I get a lot of joy out of chasing my kids around, and so just having enough of a baseline fitness to do that makes me feel pretty good. people ask me all the time, what do you want people to say when they went to WD-50? And my answer is very simple. I want people to say it made me think. And I want that to mean whatever it means to you. It made me think. Well, that's very nonspecific. Exactly. I just want you to say it made me think. And I mean that for you as a cook, and I mean that for you as a diner, for you as an employee. It made me think. Being there made me think a little bit more about things. And that's it. And I would feel great if every person someday could leave there as an employee and just say, man, it made me think. And that's all I want. I want people to think a little bit more. I want the guys that work for me to just think about what they're doing. And I that's the kind of thing I do all the time. Like, why did you do it like that? I don't know. Well, that's the worst answer I've ever heard. It not only does it break my heart, but I want to break your head. It's like, I want you to think about what you're doing. Why are you doing it like that? Is there a better way? Think about the process. And if we can be part of that education of a cook, then I'd say we've been a great success. I mean, I hope we're making tasty food along the way and that we're not just being academic about it, because I think that's often what our detractors say, is that it's a very academic approach and that they don't play to the pleasure principle and the food's not very tasty and they're abandoning all that for, you know, their lab coats and what the, that sort of thing. But that's not how I see it. You know, whoever dies knowing the most wins. And we want to know as much as we possibly can about what we're doing in an effort to do it in a more informed way. And that's all I want. I want us to be better cooks at the end of the day than we were when we started the day. That's it. That's it.
This piece was produced by Aaron Fairbanks and Jack Inslee for HeritageRadioNetwork.org with additional research by Sari Kamen. In order of appearance, the songs used in this piece are Special Agent Dana Scully Part 2 by Rectech, Easy Riding Child by Brothers NYC, Bad Thing by Ball of Flame Shoot Fire, Superficial Rappers by Rectech, Kursk by Controller, IDID by Obesity, Baldy by Hunttronic, Untitled by Matt Stewart, iJam by Knife Show, and once again, Special Agent Dana Scully Part 2 by Rectech. HeritageRadioNetwork.org is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. To learn more and become a member and find our 30-plus weekly podcasts, visit our website or connect with us on iTunes, Stitcher, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram, and more. Thanks for listening.